Morning Show, 10:35. Jason caught this during the news at 10:30. I missed it. Remember the polar vortex? The PV? We have a new PV. The pollen vortex. To make next 2 weeks unpleasant for allergy sufferers. Those sensitive to tree pollen will notice a dramatic and uncomfortable change this week as allergies arrive with a vengeance. Mild temperatures and lack of rain, obviously not talking about our area, will lead pollen counts to skyrocket, and they'll just get worse in the next 2 weeks. This year's allergy season will be shorter than most, but much more intense, leading some to call it a pollen vortex. It will be a shorter period by a number of weeks, but you will see it hitting very intensely. Dr. David Shulin, a fellow with the American Academy of Allergy, Asthma, and Immunology, told NBC News, a pollen count released midday Monday tracked levels at 104. I don't know what part of the country this is, though. Washington, D.C. Channel 4 in Washington. I will say this. My allergies have been really bad. Pollen vortex. Oh, for the love of. They're just stealing that from the stupid polar vortex. But whatever. There was a big ruling by the U.S. Supreme Court yesterday, not as big as it should or could or should have been. The U.S. Supreme Court, on a very fractured 6-2 vote, Kagan recusing because she'd been involved in the issue, on a 6-2 vote, upheld that the people of Michigan, could vote to end the practice of affirmative action in their university system. It was a constitutional amendment. Here's what happened, though. This ruling doesn't deal with affirmative action. It deals with the method by which affirmative action was ended. That is, a vote. All they said is, yeah, voters can vote to end affirmative action. We're not today going to take up whether affirmative action should or should not continue. My reaction to that is, damn it, as it was from a lot of people. The Supreme Court is still afraid to take this up. This, of course, stems, there are several rulings, but again, in 2003, the Supreme Court, 25 years after the 1978 case that upheld affirmative action could be allowed. Understand, the Supreme Court never said there's a constitutional mandate for affirmative action. They've never said that. They said constitutionally it's okay. They didn't go near that. They refused to touch that. Instead, they said, no, while affirmative action can be allowed, there is nothing unconstitutional about the people of a state voting to end it. Which is, I think, a rather obvious decision because the Supreme Court has never ruled that there's a constitutional right to affirmative action, just that it's not unconstitutional to use it. Given that, how you get rid of it should be irrelevant. Yet, Justice Sonia Sotomayor certainly wasn't going to let that stop her. She compared the voters of Michigan to those who perpetuated Jim Crow segregation laws in the South, and then she denied doing that. This time, although it allowed the minority access to the political process, the majority changed the ground rules of the process so as to make it more difficult for the minority, and the minority alone, to obtain policies designed to foster racial integration, she wrote. Although these political restructurings may not have been discriminatory in purpose, the court reaffirmed the right of minority members of our society to participate meaningfully and equally in the political process. This case involves this last chapter of discrimination, to which Justice Scalia argued, as Justice Harlan observed over a century ago, our Constitution is colorblind and neither knows nor tolerates classes among citizens, Scalia concluded, quoting the dissent in Plessy versus Ferguson. The people of Michigan wish the same for their governing. It should be shameful for us to stand in that way, and doubly shameful to equate the majority behind the constitutional amendment with the majority responsible for Jim Crow, he added in a final footnote, citing the two pages of Sotomayor's dissent. In that dissent, she opened by describing three stages of the majority discriminating against racial minorities, beginning with Jim Crow laws and ending with this vote. But then she, I wasn't comparing them to Jim Crow. Yes, you were. Now, in states that have gotten rid of affirmative action in admissions in universities, you have, in fact, seen minority enrollments decline. Well, what does that tell you? It tells you they were benefiting from it. This is the bizarre world on affirmative action, the bizarre rationale that if you don't give minorities an unfair advantage, you're discriminating against them. And that's what's gotten lost in this. What is the legal underpinning of affirmative action? That whites had an unfair advantage for so long, and they did, of course they did, that we have to tip the scales in the other direction for a while, we just don't know how long. Well, in 1978 with Bakke, we thought it might be 25 years. Now it isn't. 2003, Sandra Day O'Connor, in upholding that case from 1978, said, well, I hope it won't be another 25 years. So what's happening is you're starting to see this state by state. In the wake of that ruling, State Senator Glenn Grothman yesterday said he would reintroduce a measure to end affirmative action for University of Wisconsin admissions. And he says people don't realize how extensive race and gender preferences in our society are. Now, he goes actually beyond the UW system. He says an example of this is the targets for state and federal contracts to go to businesses owned by women and minorities or to businesses with certain hiring or subcontracting. Grothman said the best way to boost lagging levels of minority education, income, and employment is to improve schools. Meanwhile, dozens of applicants denied admissions to the University of Wisconsin-Madison have contacted a nonprofit legal group that's soliciting clients for a potential lawsuit because race is among the many factors the state flagship takes into account in its admissions decisions. The potential lawsuit is looming against the backdrop of a U.S. Supreme Court decision. UW-Madison declined Tuesday to comment on the Supreme Court decision. There is a website, a group out there, uwnotfair.org, run by Project Fair, where students who are white tell their stories. Here's the problem. If you say you're discriminated against because you're white, they call you a whiny, crybaby racist who doesn't understand your own white privilege. Here's my argument. Affirmative action should be ruled unconstitutional because it is. It discriminates on the basis of race. You get an advantage due to the color of your skin. But bizarrely, the Supreme Court over the past now 30-some years or nearly 30 years has allowed it because, we have to level the playing field. So in other words, turning the weapon of racism on those who perpetuated racism is the answer. Well, those who perpetuated racism for the most part are dead or very aging. I applaud Glenn Grothman for doing this. But it is disgusting to me that the U.S. Supreme Court doesn't have the courage to strike down something which is patently unconstitutional, favoring someone on the basis of race. It's time to end this for good. It's part of what's splitting America. But you could see from Sotomayor's comments that you were going to be called a racist if you try to end a racist practice. Blah, 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 blah. If you have any comments on this, 406-1360. 888-455-1360. I have a personal word to say about this in a moment. It's 10:45.
Follow Jerry on Twitter. Go to jerrybatershow.com.